Welcome to Hype episode 125. My name is Selena and I'm joined for this regular show by, this amazing show that's about to happen, by Pam and Merima. Hello!
Hey! 125. That's exciting.
Yeah, this is very exciting. This is like, it feels a little bit like a milestone.
Yeah,
really, let's just call it one. Mm-hmm. Almost like we planned
it. It's a milestone, guys. Yes. Oh my God. We totally planned it. Like, what are you talking about? We have a very exciting and not at all regular, because no show is regular, show for you today, where we're going to talk about the latest entertainment news, the TV shows and movies that we've been hyping about, and much more. We also do want to say that in this episode, there will be a very cool special announcement at the end of the show. So we highly recommend that you stay tuned until the very end. And we will tell you much more about something exciting that's happening. So that should be so much fun.
We highly recommend.
Anyway, let's start with our contact information. As always, if you want to let us know what you think about this episode of the podcast or anything that you want us to talk about, you can contact us in one of several ways. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr @hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can, of course, find us on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. Hypeable is, you know, your one-stop hub for fandom news and discussion. And it's where we all live and it's where we get all our news stories from and all of that. So if you like what you hear, you should definitely check out Hypeable and see what else there is to offer. So the first thing we're gonna do is how we hype. We have a lot of exciting stuff that we've been doing, and I think we're gonna start with Merima this week because you have a couple of movies that you've been catching up on.
Yes, well, I saw Fantastic Beasts. I was not on your Fantastic Beasts special. I think I saw it after you guys recorded. And
no,
I know
you weren't invited.
Yeah, I know you really liked it, and I did not like it.
Did you listen to
our
Fantastic Beasts special?
I haven't listened to it yet. I will go back and listen to it. Look, I went in with low expectations. As people who listen to Hype regularly are probably aware, I was like less than enthused by many of the choices, and I just thought overall it was kind of a mess. The like big twist at the end. And also could have been cut from the film, and like it would have made exactly as much sense. So like that's not, and the fact that David Heyman had to come out and say afterwards like, this is what happened and this person's alive and like blah blah blah, is not a good sign of for a film if they need that much like explanation afterwards, in my opinion. I am very concerned about where this is going in the future. I feel like this one I can forgive for being a little whatever, and if we were just doing like a Newt story next, like that would be fine and we would see the other four characters. I quite like Jacob. I thought the women were all terrible, as in the characterization was terrible. They didn't do anything. They were all plot devices.
You didn't like Tina?
Nope.
I love Tina.
No, she was like...
I was totally defending her.
No, she was just an obstacle. She was just an obstacle. Queenie was a love interest. The president doesn't do anything. And like, I've now described all the women in that movie. Yeah, which was frustrating. And oh, okay, minor point, and I will move on.
See, guys, this is why we didn't have
one of
those specials.
The House Elves. Did you guys talk about this in the special? Like so racist. In order to like avoid dealing with the fact that at that time in America, like there would have been some level of segregation, and certainly African Americans working in service roles, like. As well as erasing the Harlem Renaissance from existence, which is what was happening at that exact time. All of those characters were replaced with house elves in the wizard side. So when they go to that bar, like there's a house elf behind the bar and like there's a house elf doing this. There's a house elf singing because like they didn't, I mean, I was just like,
I thought it was a goblin. Not that that makes it any better.
No, it's like a weird, sexy house elf.
Really?
It was so weird. Okay. It was really... It was really confronting. I really did not like that bit. But I will say my major concern moving forward with this series is that I feel like J.K. Rowling has demonstrably like failed in her portrayal of race relations in America, which, okay, whatever, it's a fantasy film, etc. But she's now telling a story that's about anti-Semitism and about like World War II. And for like personal reasons, I'm not particularly interested in her take on that because I don't think it's going to be very good. So, yeah, that's really where my concern is, like, knowing that this is going to be kind of Grindelwald and Dumbledore's story, not, like, that I have a thing against Grindelwald and Dumbledore, but that, like, I don't really want to say J.K. Rowling's fun, whimsical take on World War II. So that happened, but I also saw...
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Before you jump ahead, I just want to tell the listeners, because that was a whole, like, rah, you know, which is obviously super encouraging. Like, that sounded ironic, but I was actually serious. Like, it's so good that we have these kinds of perspectives, but I just want to point out to the listeners that in our Fantastic Beasts special, which is myself, Pam, and Michal, we have a much longer discussion about Fantastic Beasts, and I think me and Pam both sort of have... I mean, obviously, there were things about it we didn't like, and there were, like, definitely the reveal at the end was, like, ridiculous and disappointing for me, at least, but I think we expressed also a lot of positive feelings about it. So I just wanted you guys to know, if you haven't listened to the Fantastic Beasts special yet and you're like, why is it so negative? I just want to say, well, you should maybe check that out, because we do have a much more discussion on it. But I'm so happy to finally get your view on it, Merriman. It's also really nice to have someone who genuinely just didn't like it at all, because me and Pam both had mixed opinions, but probably ended up liking it a lot. I think Pam liked it a little bit more. I'm sort of in the middle, and this is pretty much how it usually goes, actually.
Yeah, that's basically it. The hype scale.
I actually like that we sort of disagree on this, because it's nice to have varied opinions. And I just wanted to point out to the listeners that the other opinions, we won't restate them because we've already stated them, but you can go back and listen to them on Fantastic Beasts.
And I won't be on there. So that might be a selling point for some people after hearing that rant.
Or maybe some people are like, yeah, Fantastic Beasts sucks. Finally, someone said it. You know?
I mean, it wasn't that. It's more just like my overwhelming feeling is just like, why does this exist? And secretly, I feel like J.K. Rowling must secretly be bankrupt. It's the only thing that explains, like, all of her decisions over the last couple
of
years.
She was too charitable and gave away all of her money.
Yeah.
She has to be.
Exactly.
Poor Joe. But in that case, yeah. I'm okay with it. Actually.
Something like that. Okay, and then quickly, I also saw Moana, which I loved. Oh my gosh, it was so, so good. I really loved this movie. I actually watched it after watching like 6 hours of Gilmore Girls in a day, so it was a very necessary palate cleanser. The music, of course, is by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it's a Polynesian princess, and like, I, again, for kind of personal reasons, I felt a connection to this movie that I haven't felt to, like, Disney's princess movies before. I thought the music was really beautiful. I thought it was really funny. The actual film, the design of it was just absolutely stunning. Like, the way that they do the water and everything. I really, really loved it. So I would definitely recommend people check that out. And then once you have, then listen to the soundtrack, because the music is great. And, like, takes a couple listens, and there's some in, like, Polynesian languages, and it's just, yeah, it's really, really well done. I don't know, have either of you guys seen it?
I haven't, no, I haven't seen Moana yet, and I'm dying to see it, so I think I'm gonna try to go this week sometime. But I don't,
yeah, you should.
And I also have only, I've only seen, like, the first trailer, like, the teaser, so I'm actually kind of excited about that, because I've been purposely avoiding, like, reading up more about it, just to, like, so I can watch the story unfold on the big screen. So I'm really excited to do that.
I need, like, it comes out here in February, so I have a ways to go before I can see it, but I'm, like, so excited because I've heard only good things, and I'm, like, trying to avoid, like, kind of like you with Hidden Figures. I'm, like, trying to avoid even, like, opinion spoilers and stuff, but that's good. So,
oh my god. Speaking of Hidden Figures, one last Howie hype is that Fantastic Beasts was worth seeing because Hidden Figures trailer played before it, and I, like, had an aneurysm. I, like, almost screamed in the cinema. It was the most exciting thing. They also played it before Moana, which is weird because every other trailer was, like, for animated movies and then just Hidden Figures. But anyway.
Huh. That's interesting. Well, maybe that's why you also had a bad, like, about Fantastic Beasts, because you just, like, had your expectations raised with Hidden Figures, and, like, nothing can live up to that, so
yeah,
it didn't help.
I'm going to say my expectations could not have possibly been lower for Fantastic Beasts.
All right. Well, we have a lot more How We Hype stuff, and it's actually going to be music now from here on out, sort of in the spirit of Pam. And speaking of Pam, I'm going to let you go first with yours.
Oh, okay. So I have like a topical one if you celebrate Christmas specifically, or if you just enjoy Christmas music. I love Christmas music, like confession, you guys. It's so, like, my obsession with Christmas music is like on another level. So I'm usually there to check out most of the new releases in terms of like holiday music and stuff like that. And one album that I've really been enjoying this year is by Kacey Musgraves, who is a huge country star. She actually released this album on October 28th of this year, which is way too early for me to start busting out like the holiday tunes. So I wait until Black Friday, and that's when I start like sampling everything. And I've really, really enjoyed hers. She has a great mix of like old classics like Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, Let It Snow, and my personal favorite holiday song, What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? And then she also has some original music on here too. She's got this great track called Present Without a Bow, and it's just kind of got like that old-timey feel with like, you know, something new. And it's always kind of nice to discover new holiday songs that you can like pop into playlists and things like that for this time of year. So yeah, if you're looking for something like that, I highly recommend checking her album out. It's called A Very Kacey Christmas, and it's out now. You can stream it on Spotify if you don't want to pay for it. So there you go.
That's awesome. I still remember when you recommended Kacey Musgraves to me, like 100 episodes ago, I did go and check her out, and I really enjoy her music. You were so right. Like, I really do love it. That one, like, hold your own robe and raise your own babies.
Yeah.
I love that one. That
yeah, really she just kind of, like, tells it like it is. She's a great storyteller, and it's kind of nice to have people making music like that, so...
Yeah. And speaking of great music storytellers, my recommendation is, or my hype this week is Kate Vogel's newest album, Canyonlands. And Kate Vogel is an artist that she is one of my all-time favorite singers. And it's in large part because of her lyrics, which I think are absolutely brilliant. And also because her songs have always, to me, been so good to play on guitar. Like, spoiler alert, I play the guitar sometimes, and her songs are just absolutely my favorite thing to sing. So that always sort of really speaks to me. I discovered her through One Tree Hill, where she was featured, and I absolutely, I adored her ever since, and I don't even care who knows it, because One Tree Hill, super amazing show, by the way, but Kate Vogel as well. Like, she just transcends the, like, you know, oh, look, it's an artist featured on a teen show. Like, she's become, like, a lot more, to me, like, her music has always sort of, it's an interesting blend of, like, of really calming ballads and, like, just on the edge of country, but, like, on the north side of country, where it's where I like it, and, like, motivational songs, where you listen to them and you're like walking through, like you're feeling down, and you put on her music and you're like, I could do this. And you like, you're walking through town and you're like, yes, I'm amazing. Like, because Kate Vogel says I am. I don't know. It's just, it's really special. Her music is really special to me. Canyonlands is her, I believe it's her fourth studio album, and it was released a month ago. It's definitely not my favorite of her albums, I will say. I think that over the past few years, both A Fine Mess and Gravity Happens, which was released in 2011, have just been, there hasn't been a single song on there that I haven't liked, and there hasn't been a single song on there that I haven't been able to listen to and repeat and learn all the words and sing along. And I feel like with Canyonlands, I've definitely listen to it a bunch of times, and I feel like the more I listen to it, the more I like it, because the more I know the songs. But it's a lot more forgettable than her previous albums. Like I listen to it and like three songs have passed and I haven't even noticed, and that to me is kind of like, it's a lot softer, it's a lot the songs are a lot more similar, it is a little bit like it feels a little bit like a repeat of what she's done before. That said though, I do love what she's done before, so I love the music on this album. There are a couple of tracks that I think are just fantastic and that I've already kind of listened to so many times that it's almost too much because I've just been repeating them. And Crooked Road is the one that I'm probably the most into. She has this, the chorus goes like, maybe I'll play a little bit of it on the show so you get a sense of it. But it's like, will you roll with me? Rest your soul with me. It's like very soft and very gentle and very almost like hypnotic in a way that I really enjoy. Don't Count Me Out is the opening track. It's kind of her motivational track of the album. And it really reminds me of the one on, it's on Just Watch Me, which was released in 2014 on like an EP. And it's very motivational. It's very fun to listen to when you're feeling down. I can highly recommend that. And then Sun Will Rise, which is the final song on the album. I'm also really, those are my three favorites for sure. So all in all, like a really solid album if you already like Kate Vogel. But if you are not familiar with her, I would highly recommend starting with probably actually A Fine Mess, which is from 2009. I feel like that sort of is the most upbeat one. And then Gravity Happens has a few more softer tracks, but it's still very, very good. I'm a huge fan of Kate Vogel. I have no idea if you guys know who she is. She was my first concert.
Yeah, I like her a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
She reminds me a lot of Michelle Branch, too.
Yes. And, there's a lot of overlap stuff there.
Yeah. But she also did a duet with like one of my favorite bands of All Time Low. She was featured mm-hmm. on their, I think they did like an MTV Unplugged special. Yeah, that's what it was. And she came out and sang Juliet Sims' part on Remembering Sunday. And so that's like, that was my introduction to her. Probably around like 2009, actually, 2010. Mm-hmm. So.
I didn't know you guys knew her. I was like, I thought I had to explain because no one was speaking. I was like, I have to keep explaining why she's so good.
No, you just sounded like you were really into it. So it just let you go.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I was like, this is a history, an oral history of Kate Vogel. This is great.
Yeah, of Selena's interactions with Kate Vogel.
I don't know. I just really love this one. She did a cover of Starlight at one point, which is Muse's song. And that one is really worth listening to as well if you want an in to her. I don't know. I think if you've watched One Tree Hill, you know who she is. But if you don't, like, I highly recommend checking her out. She's awesome. All right, so from Kate Vogel to another piece of music that people may be a little bit more familiar with. And it's both Pam and Merrima's hype. So I'll let Merrima you introduce, and then you guys can kind of both talk about it.
Sure, we had a tweet from Rachel McCarthy, and we were going to talk about this anyway, but thanks, Rachel, for tweeting at us, who says, you guys listened to the Hamilton mixtape yet? A few gems, but overall, I'm kind of disappointed. Pretty sure most people loved it, which makes me very happy, though. And yeah, I definitely listened to it when it was released. I think I said when they did the like soft release of the pre-release tracks that I was enjoying the original songs that were like inspired by the show more than the covers. And that's definitely still true. I would say that the first time I listened to it, I did feel a little underwhelmed by the mixtape, Rachel. So like maybe we're similar there, but actually it's really lifted for me upon re-listen. Like I completely understand exactly what they're doing with this, but some of the covers felt like they're just not as good. And I know that seems weird, but like the cast of Hamilton is so strong that like you have to do something really different to kind of break from that. And some of them were too similar in style. So the ones that, the ones that broke in style, like John Legend does History Has Its Eyes on You, which is fantastic, but it's totally different than when Chris Jackson sings it in the show. And I feel like that's why it works. Some of the others are a little closer. That's why I think I like the original songs most. I think the strongest tracks are probably the ones they did in pre-release. Immigrants and My Shot are definitely two of the strongest. Probably also Who Tells Your Story is up there. So that's kind of how I'm feeling about it. Maybe give it another listen if you haven't, because it definitely is sort of improving for me, as it were. But Pam, have you? I assume you've listened to this.
Oh, I was like on this, just like you. But I totally agree that the strongest tracks are definitely the ones that are inspired by the music, because I think what Hamilton has been able to do so well is just inspire a large multitude of people from around the world to really take a look at like their own legacies and And also like the legacies of other people. It's just like, it's just such a beautiful idea, this musical. So to hear like musicians that some we might be familiar with and some that we might not be familiar with kind of tell their own story through Hamilton's journey has just been really lovely. And it's, yeah, I totally agree with basically everything you said. Specifically the track Immigrants, We Get the Job Done, I think was just so well done because it's literally just like four different MCs from different walks of life that have figured out how to all tell their own story under one banner. And if you have not like gone in to like look at the translated versions, like if you're not like fluent in Spanish or you're not conversational in Spanish, it is worth your time to see what some of these things, like what some of these people are saying, because it completely like puts a whole different meaning to the song. I don't know if you've done that, but it's just like, it's
really powerful. Yeah, I learned how to look. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was like,
yeah,
I need to know, because I think that's my favorite track.
Yeah, the Residente verse, which is the fourth verse, that he has this really great part where he says like something like, "Oh God, oh con un pico, una pala y un restillo te construimos un castillo." So I was like, yeah, that one gave me chills. But I also really like My Shot, and then for like for covers, I really liked the reprieve of Dear Theodosia. I thought that was really pretty.
The like Chance the Rapper one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that one's fantastic. I mean, the covers are not bad in a sense, but like they're just not as interesting to me, I think is my sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because like you already have like you said, it's if you have like Leslie Odom Jr. singing your songs, you know, it's like it
right.
Of course, like you know, people like Chance, Sia, like Regina Spektor, like they can all like come in and do something amazing with it, but you already have an amazing singer, so.
Yeah, and I think for me, in a way, a couple of the covers felt a little indulgent, and not that that's a bad thing, but like I think like Lynn has said that, you know, Helpless was written as like an Ashanti Ja Rule song, and so Ashanti and Ja Rule cover Helpless, but like I was just like, okay, and that's cool. And I could totally understand why for him that would be like such a huge deal and why he would want to do that and, you know, to have them involved, et cetera, et cetera. But again, like it doesn't have the punch that the original has, and it's also not doing anything like particularly interesting with it. So it just makes you be like, huh, okay, yeah. Cool. Like
it's
that's
just
fine.
Like, it's just fun. Like, cause I remember that song coming out, you know, when I was like probably in high school or maybe like first year of college or whatever. And so it's just like a fun Easter egg, but yeah, you're right. Like you said, it just like it's not necessarily necessary. It would have been cool to see what they could have done with the idea of the song, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I like the mix of the different things, and I'm really enjoying it. I don't want to give the impression that I'm not.
And the placement of all of these tracks, like just like is really strategically well done. So if you're kind of like skipping around, it is kind of worth your time to just let it run through the way that they
definitely
put it on the mixtape, because I think it completely adds a different experience. We also want to talk about the live stream. Did you watch the live Ham for Ham with some of these performances?
Yeah. You want to talk about it. Why don't you talk about it?
Yeah. You know what? It's so funny because when was it Black Thought came out and started up the Roots and all these other awesome people's rendition of My Shot, the first thing I thought was like, man, it's too bad all these people like actually have careers and are too busy, because they could totally tour this mixtape and I would go.
Yeah.
And it was just like a really fun additive. And it's so cool that they decided to live stream it to the world, because if you can't be in the room where it happens, like that's basically the next best thing. And it was just really fun to see, you know, these people have fun with the tracks they were able to contribute. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. I would say watch it after you've listened to the tape. Like, listen to it first and then watch it, I think, because I think the actual audio has more impact, and then the video is just kind of fun as, like, an accompaniment.
Yeah, specifically Andra Day's Burn is, like, way better in recorded format than it was, like, live.
Yeah.
And she's an amazing vocalist.
I agree.
But, yeah.
All right, well, that we're kind of going to stay on the Lin-Manuel Miranda kick as we move on into the news this week, because our first story is actually about him taking on yet another project just in his quest to benevolently take over the universe, which we're totally in favor of.
Right, as if Lin-Manuel has any more time on his hands. He's actually signed up for a new project in conjunction with everything he's still doing with Hamilton, and then, of course, his upcoming stint on Disney's Mary Poppins and all that good stuff. So he's actually going to be involved in The Kingkiller Chronicle, which is a trilogy of fantasy novels that I have not read, but maybe one of you guys have. The books are by Pat Rothfuss, and they follow a adventurer slash famous musician called Kavoth, and he's telling the story of his life to somebody who is a chronicler named Devin. So it kind of goes from there, and Lin is actually set to develop, of course, the music for this. This probably makes a lot of sense. He's going to be writing original songs for the adaptation, but apparently it's also being optioned for the stage, so he is probably going to be working on that as well, which is kind of cool. He's also working with Lindsay Beer, who is set to be writing the upcoming Dungeons & Dragons adaptation. She's writing the script for the feature film, but it definitely sounds like a really cool concept. I am surprised I've never heard of this series before, but I wanted to know if any of you guys have.
I feel the same.
But for the same reason. I don't know why this is not something that's already in our lives.
Yeah, and yeah, also when it was announced, like everyone in all my social media feeds were like freaking out. And I was like, what is this series that I've never heard of, but everyone else is obsessed with? Like, how did this pass me by? I just assumed it didn't come to Australia or something, but like, obviously
yeah,
not.
Yeah, same.
It's cool, though. It sounds really fun.
Yeah. So it's going to be like a television series, and that apparently is going to be great because they're going to be able to expand the world further than what it already is in the books. So that should be really fun for book lovers. And if you have read this series or even like the first one, we'd love for you guys to write in and let us know what you think and kind of sell us on whether or not we should be picking this up, just like you have with A Wrinkle in Time, because I think that would be really fun.
After A Wrinkle in Time, we'll dive into this one.
Exactly. We'll definitely be keeping tabs on this. Obviously, we have a lot of attachments to Lin-Manuel Miranda, but this just sounds like a really fun idea, so I'm into it.
It does. And now for our next story, we're moving into some Marvel news now, specifically the new trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy. I feel like for once, something big trailer related dropped like the day before our podcast as opposed to the day after our podcast. So that's very nice. Thanks, James Gunn. We appreciate it. It's because we've been doing all that Gilmore Girls. He's thanking us for behalf of his brother. But the new Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, if you haven't seen it yet, it's fantastic. It's so much fun. It features a lot of Baby Groot, which is obviously what the people want. It features, you know, it's the thing I love about Guardians of the Galaxy and that I'm gonna love about the sequel too, is how ridiculous it is in the best way. It's almost like, I know some people like it, but I really detested Jupiter Ascending because I thought it was stupid. This is like the good kind of, because it's like actually really good, but also really aware of itself and really fun and poking a little bit fun of the premise and space, opera, whatever, superheroes. This trailer just has all the stuff. It has the action, it has the humor, it has the a hint that there's going to be a little bit of heartfelt moments in there.
Yeah, I really liked it. I feel like Guardians was, like, I had some issues with the film, but it was overall super fun. And for a lot of people, I think people would say it's definitely their favorite Marvel film because it just felt different tonally. So they have, like, it's a high bar that they've set for themselves. So I feel like the trailer, as far as we can tell, looks like they're meeting that, and it's going to be the same kind of fun story. Yeah, I really liked Guardians. Like, it wasn't my favorite movie because Captain America forever, but like, I definitely get the people who who were into it, and I'm like excited to see, because it mostly was just super fun, and this looks like it's going to be really fun and kind of tongue-in-cheek. And also, who liked Jupiter Ascending? Like, where, I mean, aside from liking it, ironically, because it was terrible. Like, it's the worst movie ever made, but it was so funny to watch. So,
oh my gosh.
It was kind of enjoyable, I guess. Pam, don't tell us you like it.
No, I didn't, but I will say that in LA, they have a bunch of bargain theaters. So a lot of times you can go see, like, new release movies for, like, $4. at these cinema houses. And I went to see Jupiter Ascending because I had some time to kill. I was trying to, like, beat out traffic, basically. And I had no idea what I was getting into, and it was, like, the shock of a lifetime.
Yeah, that was the same for me when I saw it. I was like, what am I watching? Like, Space Pocahontas.
Why does Channing Tatum have these weird ears, and he's on rollerblades? So, like,
why is Eddie Redmayne channeling Voldemort? Like, what is happening?
Basically, it was like, Eddie, is this your plea? Are you, like, lashing out because they didn't cast you as young Tom Riddle? Like,
yeah, Oh my goodness. Sorry.
Not Jupiter Ascending. We clearly have a lot of issues, like, built up, but we should have a Jupiter Ascending special. No, but I didn't even like it, ironically. I just thought it was dumb. Anyway, Guardians of the Galaxy is actually, like, probably my favorite Marvel movie. So, I'm one of the people, yeah. But I will say the one worry that I have with this film is that I don't think so because I trust James Gunn, but I would worry that they would be hyping up Baby Groot too much, or, like, using him too much, because I don't think Baby Groot is that cute. Like, that's, like, my one thing is I'm a little bit over Baby Groot already. And I was over him, like, 5 minutes after the movie ended. So I would just hope that that's not, like, oh, the audience loves him, so let's just throw him in everywhere. I feel like he's better in small doses. No pun intended.
That's really funny, because he wasn't in the teaser, and people were like, where's Baby Groot? Like, they waited
exactly.
for
it. And I was just like, eh.
Huh. You're like, also, oh, maybe, like, he's not in it. Bye.
Yeah.
Also, because I'm me, shout out to the soundtrack. Like, that's the one thing I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's the real star of this movie. Let's be real. But anyway, it's very, very exciting. You can see that trailer over in Hypebeast. And tell me, let me know. Is there too much Baby Groot, just enough Baby Groot, or just not enough? Should he get his own spinoff? Tell me in the comments.
All right, well, let's move on to some other kind of exciting movie news. Amy Schumer also has a new project coming up. According to The Hollywood Reporter, she is currently in talks to star in the upcoming live-action Barbie movie. Who's
this
excited? It actually kind of is, because I feel like it. You know, I have more faith in the idea of this with Amy Schumer as Barbie, because she wouldn't be the conventional pick. And I think that that's amazing.
And it's not even, I just want to clarify, it's not even, I watched Amy Schumer live. I actually think she's kind of funny, but it's not even like, yay, Amy Schumer. Like, she's a great, like, whatever. It's more that the idea of a live action Barbie movie is so, like, almost offensive to me. But the news that Amy Schumer could be playing Barbie, just kind of like you said, it's kind of reveals that this is not the kind of movie that maybe we thought it was going to be. Like, it could potentially be a really weird, like, parody-ish kind of thing. And I would actually find that very interesting.
Mm, it's interesting that you say that, because now that she's attached, it has also been reported that she's set to have influence on the script, which means that she and her sister, Kim, may be rewriting the initial idea they had. But the initial idea for the movie is actually really interesting. So originally, it was there's a script by Hilary Winston, who wrote the first draft of this, and in her story, the Barbie adventure begins in a perfect land of Barbies, where one woman slowly awakens to the fact that she doesn't fit in. She's expelled from the idealistic land and journeys to the real world, where she discovers that being unique is an asset. So they're really
enchanted.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, like, I don't think that Giselle ever, like, you know, she didn't ever really care that she was
kind of like a Barbie.
Yeah, yeah. She was, like, more of a conventional Barbie. But I don't know. It does kind of feed into Mattel's message for little girls, which is that they can be anybody they want. If anybody saw those really heartwarming Barbie commercials they put out about a year ago, it was all about, you know, believing that you can be, like, a professor, you can be a brain surgeon, you can do anything. So uniqueness is, like, something that they're really striving to put out there. And they've kind of shown their commitment to doing that with releasing Barbies that are different skin colors and come from different backgrounds and have different body types and things like that. So I guess even though we have, like, one perception of Barbie, which is, like, this perfect model blonde, they have actually been making a bit of an effort to embrace diversity in their line of toys for girls. So that's kind of cool. And I think that Amy would do a really great job. So,
yeah.
Moving on to Harry Potter news. As always, we have exciting news for American Harry Potter fans and for J.K. Rowling's bank balance, because Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is going to Broadway and we have a confirmed date. It's going to open on Broadway in spring of 2018 at the Lyric Theatre, which is currently where the Cirque du Soleil show is. There's no cast or anything announced yet. But, you know, this is the first step in J.K. Rowling's vaguely threatening statement of a year or so ago where she was like, you will see it. So watch out, New Yorkers, you will see it. And I mean, I hope Puffs like updates itself when this opens, because like that's a whole wealth of material. But yeah, basically, if you have the chance to go, like this is making it easier for some fans. And like that's exciting. Not for me. So whatever. But bye. Why'd you give this to the foreign person? Just like rubbing it in our faces.
Pam, how do you feel about this as someone who might potentially actually get to go?
I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to afford to see Hamilton in San Francisco. So one battle at a time, guys. I think it is exciting. Broadway doesn't necessarily mean that like any other part of the United States will see it anytime soon. Usually it stays on Broadway for about a year or two, and then it starts traveling and then usually goes to Chicago first because they like to test out shows there, and then maybe it comes to the West Coast. So yeah, it's going to be a long process either way. What I did think was really interesting was that they're cutting down the size of the theater, like the seats and stuff. I don't know if you guys read that in the, like they're I guess like the theater can fit about like 1800 or 1900 people, and they're cutting it down to 1500. Like, as per the
Well, that's actually pretty interesting. I was going to comment on that. I just wanted to say the reason I asked you if you were excited is actually kind of because I think there's a point to be made here that, again, you know, J.K. Rowling's you will see it comment is kind of coming back to bite us all, you know, as we knew it would, because, no, the fact that it's moving to Broadway in 2 years or a year and a half is not necessarily... Like, you will not see it necessarily because Broadway, as you said, it's not a lot of people who have the opportunity to go. And I think that's kind of like, it's exciting for the people for whom it has become more possible to see it now. But I still really sort of struggle with this being like such an exclusive event considering it's tied to Harry Potter. Speaking about the size of the theater, I also think that's interesting because as someone who's actually seen the play, the stage is very small. The action takes place in a very confined little space. And I think because it's not a musical, because it is like I was going to say cinematic, but there's like spectacular elements like flying dementors and stuff. But at the end of the day, the action happens in a very small area. Most of the effects are relatively small. It's like practical magic, like people transforming into other people or like disappearing hands or like whatever the hell. And I think that makes sense that they need to cut it because you won't like if you can't really see the people on stage, like you're not going to have a really good time at this play because there's not a lot of spectacle to it. Just by, well, there is, but it's small spectacle. All right.
Okay.
So I think that makes sense. It's sad because it means that even less people will be able to go see it, but it makes sense in terms of enjoyment, like unless they wanted to have it up on like a big screen or something.
All right.
To make it smaller.
And really, like, if we're being honest, they should be broadcasting it to theaters all over the world. But
it's kind of like what I'm getting at. Like, I'm really excited for the people who are excited about this. But it's funny because, like, on Hyperbole's Twitter as well, like, the majority of people are like, okay.
And, you know, the whatever. The thing is, genuinely, honestly, I would love to see the stage production of this just because regardless of...
And you should because it's so amazing.
Right. And that's what I was getting at is that regardless of how we felt about the book, the thing that has really given me hope for the entire like decision to do this is the fact that every single person that I've talked to from Hyperbole and beyond that has seen the play but also read the book has said, regardless of how you feel about the book, the stage production is amazing. And that's wonderful, but it is like, I mean, with theater getting more and more expensive.
The one you don't get to see.
Yeah. I mean, like, I just like, just as a, like, to use Hamilton as an example, like, those tickets right now are going anywhere between $100 and $550 just in San Francisco alone. Like, let's put that into perspective. A couple of years ago, I could have gone to see, you know, a long standing, like a hot Broadway play for, you know, $50. You could get nosebleed tickets for $50. Now it's like $100 and beyond. It's like, it is like a commitment. It is like, it's not cheap to go to the theater.
Oh, so, speaking of the theater, and this just reminded me, I forgot that I saw Darren Criss in Hedwig when I was in LA, and it was really great.
Oh, how was that?
Nice. Yeah, he was fantastic. He was like, I have seen some of the Neil Patrick Harris clips and stuff, but I kind of feel like Darren Criss in a way is a little better for it because he's sort of a bit rawer, which works in the role, and Neil Patrick Harris is just like, is great, but is just different. But yeah, it was fantastic. He was amazing.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's cool. But yeah, no, I mean, speaking about Cursed Child, though, like, I think it's also interesting. Like, I know there was this big thing on Twitter over the past week where J.K. Rowling sort of struck out against, like, ticket poachers or whatever they're called. And she was like, you know, theater, like, we, like, hate people that hike up ticket prices because theater should be affordable to everyone. And people were like, excuse me.
For real?
Tickets to your play are, like, a ridiculous amount of money.
You know what?
Like, everyone cannot afford this.
Honestly, if she really wanted to take a stand on that, she would be like, you know what? Every ticket, no matter where you are, is $25 and that's it.
Yeah,
like that's exactly. Affordable. Or put exactly. Out more like than a lottery. Like so many, the thing that I will give Broadway credit for is that there are so many plays that you like if you're a student, you can get a discount. If you stand in line early enough, you can get a discount. You can totally see a Broadway play for like $30 if you know.
Yeah, and to be fair, like that extends to a lot of West End plays as well. Like I've seen so many plays and like shows on the West End from just, yeah, like being a student or whatever. It doesn't seem like that extends to, I'm over J.K. Rowling's faux, like accessibility, whatever thing about Cursed Child, because she went on and on and on and on and on and on and on about how this was designed for the theater. And like, you had to see the play and once you see it, you'll understand. And then has like, made no effort to actually make that a reality for people. So like if fans really want to see it and the only way they can see it is like because it's sold out so far in advance, like to buy a ticket of someone, like that's their prerogative to do. And if you want to make it accessible, like release it in theaters, film it and screen it like they do for every like national theater company thing. Like it's just whatever. I'm not about that. It's just like Harry Potter should not be exclusive, and it is now. And it's sad that the announcement of this was met with so many people being like, cool, but I live in America and like that's still not an option for me to go. And obviously it's not going to be an option for like most people. So sad face.
Yeah. But again, I mean, I will just reiterate again, if you are listening to this and you somehow have a chance to go, do go.
Because, oh, yeah.
We have a lot of like, we feel like it's a problem that is not very accessible. And obviously, especially, like, I was extremely lucky to get to go. Pam and Merrima haven't gone, probably, like, won't be able to, at least for a long time. But the play is ridiculously amazing to watch on stage. It's a great experience. And I wish, you know, like Pam said, this should just be released in streaming and cinemas. Like that's what we really wish would happen. So if you get the chance, take it. But I think it's also okay to be aware that considering that this play, like the story isn't amazing, but the experience of seeing it live is amazing. And the fact that most Potter fans don't get that experience, I think that is something we can sort of take a step back and say, okay, well, it's very unfortunate how all that played out.
That's why it's more frustrating.
Yeah.
Cause like it was not captured in the book.
Exactly. Okay, so moving on now to something that is just become more accessible, you know, what's the opposite of J.K. Rowling? It's Netflix. There's been like, this is so exciting, you guys. Like, I never thought this day would come. Netflix announced this week very suddenly and kind of out of the blue, at least to me, that its programs are now available to download and watch offline. So like on not on your computer, but on mobile and Android devices. So that means like you can take Netflix content, you know, on travels and you can take them on the bus and you can take them like where there's no Wi-Fi, like my cabin in the woods. And it's like, I don't know about you guys, like this is because Netflix is amazing and streaming is amazing. My computer doesn't have a DVD drive anymore, and I find myself in a lot of places where there's just no internet, or the internet isn't good enough for streaming, etc. And it's been such a bother of like technology becoming so dependent on you having internet access. So this announcement just like made my, like, I cannot believe this is real life. It's so good. I'm so excited. I'm going on a trip next month and I'm going to be using this for sure. This is so cool.
Yeah, I was definitely thinking about this for travel. Like, obviously, I've just been away for 2 months, so this would have been great for many planes and things. Spoiler alert, Australia is far from places. That's a long plane ride. But I also think this is great in terms of, I know you said accessibility, but like just speaking seriously about that, not everyone has an internet connection that is like reliable enough to stream things on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so this makes, like, if people are, you know, if they can like go and jump on like Starbucks, or like maybe at their school they have Wi-Fi or whatever, and like this, depending on their home situation, maybe like they don't have that option there, like this is so great because it means that those people will be able to like download this and kind of take them with them and, you know, still experience those stories. And I think this is like, I'm curious to see how this actually works out, but I'm really excited for it. And it's like, this is the most exciting news of the week, very clearly. So
clearly, I mean, yeah, even like I'm, you know, when like half the Gilmore Girls I've watched has been in like really shitty quality because my internet is so spotty in terms of loading. And it usually, even though I've set it to the highest level of streaming, it still streams at the lowest level a lot of the time. So just in terms of that, like I didn't even think about that, but that could potentially like make my streaming experience a lot more enjoyable if I just download them ahead of time.
Exactly.
Experiment with that. So great news. Just yay. There's not much to the story other than to say it's happening and to be excited about it.
Yeah, PSA. Well, Netflix is great.
Well, here's something else that you guys might be excited about. The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, of course, they released, two movies. And it sounds like they're definitely working on a third, but it just remains to be seen over whether that's going to be greenlit or not. Everybody got really excited because Alexis Bledel has, of course, been making the press rounds for Gilmore Girls. And she also mentioned in a recent interview that she's interested in coming back for Sisterhood 3. And that's really great. But I do want to point out that this is not necessarily new news because all of the girls have been saying this for about a year now. So it definitely sounds like there are plans to make this a reality. And I know specifically Blake Lively has said that if this happens, like, it would definitely be more adult, which makes sense because these are all grown women now. They're not like teenagers sharing pants. So now they can be women sharing pants. But it is definitely exciting to hear specifically from Alexis that she's down for more. And if you want to see what she had to say about that, you can head over to Hypeable and check out her interview with Jimmy Fallon, where she talked a little bit more about this.
The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, like, I unapologetically love these movies. I think it's so much fun. I think they really capture like a time in my life and a kind of being, having a teenage experience from four so widely different points of view. And I actually thought all the girls were very interesting and very likable. And I really enjoyed the second movie as well. So like, I don't know, people are complaining about that, but I really loved it. So this would be so much fun. I feel like we're in an age of just rebooting and continuing and everything. But the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants actually has a bunch of books out that have never been turned into film. And there's one of them where they're all adults and stuff. So it wouldn't even be like, oh, let's reboot this for profit. It would just be like, oh, let's tell the next chapter in the story that already exists.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. So there's, it would make sense. There's that last book in the series is them like 10 years later. So that would be the logical one for them to pick up. But there's a bunch that they haven't done. Yeah, this is cool. Why not? I mean, Alexis Bledel is obviously into the revivals these days. So that would be a good time. And speaking of revivals or continuations, I guess, as it is, we have some more news for the Star Trek TV series, Star Trek Discovery. Just to quickly run through. So we have some casting news. I know you guys talked about some of this on the last episode. We have two more people to add. We have Doug Jones and Anthony Rapp, who are both going to be joining the series. They're both going to be playing Starfleet science officers. Anthony Rapp is the first confirmed crew member of the Discovery itself. We don't know exactly which ship Doug Jones is going to be on yet. And also, apparently, his character is going to be gay. So Brian Fuller said when he was attached that there'd be at least one gay character. It looks like that's going to be Anthony Rapp to start with. And that's kind of it for now. We're starting to see, you know, more casting and more things coming out about this. So maybe this will ease the minds of some people who were less thrilled by the news that Brian Fuller was stepping down as showrunner. I will count myself among those people. But yeah, are you guys planning on watching this?
Yeah, definitely. I was a little bit disappointed with the news that Michelle Yeoh wouldn't be the lead character, because I'd kind of hyped myself up for that. But I'm still super excited about this. I'm definitely going to give it a chance. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So the major casting that we're waiting for now is that lead female character. So we will wait and see who that is going to be.
Exciting. Now, guys, like, we can't put it off any longer. The biggest story of the episode, basically, like, the reason that I'm always excited to do hype, but this is, like, seriously what I am hyping about and has been hyping about for the past 24 hours since this amazing news was out. We're going to talk video games, guys, so buckle up, because it's about to get real nerdy in here in the best possible way. So Saturday night, I guess not totally out of the blue, but it felt like my heart fluttered as though it was Christmas early. It was announced at a PlayStation Experience event that The Last of Us, which is one of my all-time favorite video games, is getting a sequel. And it's called The Last of Us Part 2, you know, very imaginatively. And I was so excited about this. I made Merriman and Pam watch the trailer for this just because I needed to not be shouting into a void. I needed to be shouting into like a semi-sentient void, at least, that was aware of what I was talking about. So you guys both watched it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yay! I'm so happy. Like, I know it might not have made any sense, but I'm very, very glad that you watched it. Did you have any opinions about it? Did you think it looked interesting?
Does Lin-Manuel Miranda do the music for this one too?
No. The person who does the music actually is Gustavo Santaolalla, I think you say his name. The soundtrack for The Last of Us, the game, is actually astoundingly beautiful.
Oh, I mean, I was kidding, but so, I feel like I've latched onto something. It looks, I mean, I don't, Selena, you made us watch this thing that I don't understand what it is. It's like a girl playing guitar. She's going to go kill people. It's like one of those hyper-realistic game trailers that I never quite understand. But that's fun. It seems cool. Like, I don't.
But I will explain it to you.
What is it about?
Okay. Well, the first The Last of Us game, it was released in 2013, and then it was released remastered in 2014 with like really beautiful, even more beautiful graphics. It's a post-apocalyptic, so already I'm hooked right there, story about a man named Joel and a 14-year-old girl named Ellie. And Joel is the playable character, and the two characters, they trek through this post-apocalyptic wasteland with zombies and people that are out to kill them. And the story is extremely moving and beautiful, and you kind of play your way through a very, like, it's a very set story. Like, it is a lot of gameplay, but it's not so much like, it's not like an open world like Fallout, but it's one of the best, like, I think, game stories that you could ever make. And the story of Ellie and Joel, like, kind of becoming like father-daughter to each other is really beautiful. And the moral dilemmas that they sort of face are like really heavy and really interesting. And it turns out, you know, Ellie, she's now 19. She's going to be the playable character in the sequel. And she sort of went through some really terrible things in the first game. And you can sort of see, like, she was a really nice, sweet kid that was sort of like able to find happiness even when, like, it was really dark and they were about to die and stuff. And you can just see what she's become is like really, really deep, and to find out what happened during those 5 years, and to see her sort of like playing as her embarking on this quest of revenge, it's just going to be really thrilling. She's an LGBT character, which is extremely rare in video games, like playable video game characters. And there's something like, it's hard to explain, but I basically just wanted to make you guys watch it because I think this game does something that most, when you think about video games, you think, oh, action slash hack, like running around collecting things. And The Last of Us really isn't like that. The Last of Us is all about story. And it's a really beautiful story.
So I have actually played part of this game before.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've always wanted to play it more. I've played a little bit and I've like watched people play it, but I've never actually gone through the whole journey. So I like that you're so excited about it because it's always been on like my list of things to try.
Did you think about the parts you played?
I think it's really great. I honestly, because I'm not a huge gamer, I prefer worlds that are a little more confined. Like, I prefer a story that's a little more confined because I'm just not good at exploring large expanses of space. Mm-hmm. That's why I think that it was really easy for me to become, like, invested in something like this.
It's a gateway game, isn't it, in a way? Because it is so linear.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was, like, you're right, it is kind of like a gateway because that's, like, it's a big reason why I was a little bit more interested in something like Assassin's Creed when, like, my brother started playing that and things like that. So, yeah, I've always kind of just wanted to go back and try it out, like, actually try it out and not just, like, give it a half-assed attempt, which is what I did the first time I played it. But the graphics in this specifically are so amazing. And yeah. I'm interested to see how bigger fans receive it, I guess, when the game finally comes out. Because
because people don't want a sequel. And that's the thing that's so interesting about this too, is that people have been really like, look, The Last of Us is so beautiful and so unique and so above and beyond most game experiences that they don't want it to be quote-unquote like tainted by becoming a series or whatever. But when you, and that's the thing, like watching this trailer just completely wipes all of those doubts away, because I'm just interested to find out what happens next for Ellie. I'm excited to leave the confines of the last story behind and embark on something that's clearly going to be a new chapter of her story, and however much Joel is going to feature into it, you know, obviously remains to be seen. But I think there's so much more to Ellie than what we've seen. There was also a DLC that was released, but I didn't really enjoy that very much because it was a lot of story and not like hardly any gameplay really. And I feel like there needs to be a little bit more gameplay for me to enjoy it. But for sure, like the Last of Us just, it's so scary too, is the thing. Like, it's genuinely terrifying, at least to me, because I'm a chicken. So I actually, The Last of Us 2 Confession is the only game that I've ever watched those gameplay videos on YouTube for, because I usually find those like a huge waste of my time. Like, because I'm like, I would rather play this and watch other people play it, but just watching people experience some of the shocks and surprises of this game for the first time is like really fun. So highly, The Last of Us is for you, even if you don't like video games, just for the story. So I would just highly recommend it. And then I, like, you guys know that, like, hardly anything ever gets to me, but I, like, had tears in my eyes, like, the first three times I watched this trailer, and I watched it over and over again for the song. So this is a really important story, and it's a really just wonderful trailer, and it totally, totally got me excited. Like, again, as I said, like, I have no doubts that the sequel is going to be good now, and now I just need a release date because I need this in my life, like, right now. So very excited and very happy that you guys had solidarity with me and decided to watch it too, because that makes me happy.
We're here for you.
Maybe like
we can follow instructions.
Hype get together. Yeah, thanks. When if ever we do like a hype get together or whatever, then Pam can play it and Merriman can watch Pam play it, and then you guys will both have the experience.
I'm not watching anyone play a video game. But anyway, okay, moving on to
Merriman will sit with her back to the screen while Pam plays.
That sounds right, and make snacky commentary. Okay, one last story before we wrap the news this week, and it's some book news, and it's exciting news for Divergent fans because the story is not over. Veronica Roth has announced that she has a Divergent epilogue, and it's coming to you if you pre-order her next book. So the book is called Carve the Mark. It's going to be released on January 17 next year. And if you buy a copy and upload a copy of your receipt, then you'll be sent a copy of We Can Be Mended, which is this Divergent epilogue that's going to pick up with Thor/Tobias. She said, "I've always said the Divergent series felt complete to me, but a little while ago I realized that there was still some of the story I had left untold. So I wrote something just for myself about what Tobias had been up to in the years after Allegiant." So yeah, I mean, she already had that series of like the four chronicles, you know, where she like told some of the story from Thor's perspective. And funny side note, I just watched Allegiant. Like, that was another movie I saw while I was away. I mean, movie was like, you just went to TV. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Okay.
Like, I don't dislike the Divergent series at all. Like, I quite liked it, actually. And the movie is just terrible. And, like, I feel really bad for Divergent fans because, like, it's been a rough year and... like, we don't even know if they're going to finish it. Shailene Woodley's like, I'm not doing it, and I didn't sign up for this. So at least there's, like, this kind of silver lining of maybe some kind of closure. If they're not going to get the adaptations, at least maybe they'll get to see kind of what's happening with the characters now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's, are you, like, I know a lot of people are like, why is this prequel or sequel happening at all? Like, what's the point of it? I'm like vaguely interested
in the
not so much
the epilogue.
I care. Yeah, in the epilogue, like, not because like I necessarily care very much about four, but just because I feel like the ending of the series, like, I think everyone knows what happens at the ending of the series, but we won't say anything, obviously. But I mean, just how the hell that she wants the story to continue on from there, I always find that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see her kind of picking it up and maybe doing it as kind of a, everyone's okay. And like, it's called We Can Be Mended. So the hint's kind of in the title. I think I reviewed for Hyperbole like years ago when it came out, that four series. And I really like her writing from his perspective. So I can see why like this would be something people are excited for. And, you know, a lot of fans felt a bit of shock and rage and, you know, frustration over some of the events in Allegiant. So maybe this is like a way of just saying, you know, everything's okay and like thank you. And it's kind of a thank you present to those fans who have kind of stuck through, and also a way to get them to buy her new book. So like props to her for that too.
Well, that brings us to the end of the news. Thank you so much for sticking with us. We hope you enjoyed it. Now we're going to move into TV show of the week, and we're going to try to keep it vaguely short because we have a lot of listener feedback to get to as well. So I'm just going to say briefly the big CW DC's superhero show super crossover event is happening right now. I have only seen Supergirl. I'm trying to get back into Supergirl. So I actually kind of skipped some of season two and just kind of jumped to watch the last couple of episodes. And I... we'll say, obviously, when you haven't, like, when you're a little bit short of context, obviously a few things fall out, but you can sort of figure out what's happening. I am not going to lie. I'm mainly interested because of Katie McGrath, who, of course, we all know and love from Merlin, and who is absolutely spectacular in this episode and or in the show in general. And I was actually very, very excited because for a minute there, I thought they were just going to pull another Morgana with her, but it seems like she's actually going to be a much more interesting, layered and good character for Kara to interact with. So that made me really happy. I love Kara. Like, I will forgive this show almost anything because I think Kara is such a great lead character. She's so happy and so positive. I'm not a big fan of her new love interest. I think I saw someone on Twitter say that the show would be a lot better if Kara didn't have any love interest at all. And I kind of feel like that would be the case too, but I guess I get they have to, like, everyone has to have a love interest in the show, so that's fine. Really enjoyed it. I'm very excited to catch up with the rest of the crossover events, and I will probably be able to speak more on that next week. I know you're up on Supergirl too, Pam, right?
Yeah, I caught up over the summer on the first season, and I really, really enjoyed it. After, like, I think episode like 5 or 7 or something like that. I just got so hooked and I completely understood the hype again because we all had such great things to say about the pilot. And then like the forthcoming, you know, like 3 episodes or so were just kind of so slow that it was hard to keep up. But I'm really glad I caught up and I'm really enjoying the show. And I just, yeah, Kara is just so, you want to root for her and that's so nice.
And then I know we had a comment from Abby Lee on Twitter who asked, are you guys still watching Pitch? What do you think? I'm so excited for the finale, but sad the season is so short. So we know Pam is watching Pitch because you talked about it last week, I think, right? So are you still watching this week?
Yeah, I think last week I talked about Westworld. I don't know if I talked about Pitch. I can't remember. But yes, I am definitely still keeping up with Pitch. It's getting so good. This last episode, we finally got to the point where we had to see if Lawson was going to loosen his grasp on his no trade clause and get traded to a team that actually has a shot at the World Series. This is kind of nice because it's like fictional world meets real world in terms of the MLB, because the team he was looking to maybe get traded to is the Chicago Cubs, which of course won the World Series this year. So that was kind of nice. Ginny's brother is in town and he's kind of shaking things up. The show is so, so good. I'm going to cry if this does not get renewed, you guys. But I am, like Abby Lee, looking forward to the finale.
Awesome.
Okay, well, I didn't watch any TV because I'm still recovering from Gilmore Girls. But I want to give a shout out to the book that's made me sound pretty husky and tired because I was up till 1:30 this morning reading it, which is the second book in the Illuminae Files. It's Gemina. It's by Amy Kaufman and Jay Kristoff. And we had Amy on last year to talk about Illuminae, the first book, and so can confirm by 1:30 a.m. The fact that I could not stop reading it, that this one is also very good and I would definitely recommend. And this is the one that you really need to read it in hard copy because it has all of the fun like layout things and this one has pictures in it and like there's a lot of fun things going on.
Cool. Well, okay, so let's move on to listener feedback. We have a lot of stuff to get through. The first one is a comment from hypeable.com. It's on our podcast post. It's Sarah who says, I watched the trailer for Emerald City and then ran over here to share my excitement at how dreamy it all is. But you guys beat me to the punch. Thanks for being so up to date. Can't wait to watch it. I think it's going to be a new favorite. That's awesome. Yeah, we shared our love for that one last week. That looks fantastic. And we have a couple of emails too. We're obviously going to get the first one to Pam.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that I'm going to take a swig of water right now because I have a feeling this is long. So thank you, Michelle. Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to read this amazing email from Michelle who wrote in and said, hey, Hype, love your podcast, listen to it religiously, and have thus been meaning to write in for some time. Here's a few quick points I wanted to make before I ask my main question. I'm a Ravenclaw. My Patronus is a swift bird, which shocked me a lot. I was expecting a marine animal. I did Hypeable's Fantastic Beast quiz, and I got a Demiguise, which I'm pretty happy with. I'm a first-time Gilmore Girls watcher, thanks to you. I took water and then I just completely messed up. Okay, Michelle continues, I'm only on season 2, but I'm totally hooked and so is my boyfriend, though he will never admit it. I really enjoyed Fantastic Beasts, but Johnny Depp was a real drag on the whole experience. I think it would be really great if Jared Harris played Dumbledore. After all, he is the son of original Dumbledore. He was practically born for this role. He's also a great actor, as we have seen in The Crown. Oh my god, The Crown, heavy breathing. And I think he's about the right age. Okay, so my main question is, what are your opinions on watching trailers? I know as entertainment journalists, it's your job and you have to, but if it wasn't your job, would you still watch them religiously? I used to be a trailer whore, but after reading the article, which suggested the trailers essentially ruin the initial movie watching experience, and surprise, I have limited myself to teaser trailers. I only watched the first teaser for Fantastic Beasts and Moana and Rogue One, and honestly, it's made me more excited to see them in cinemas. Especially Fantastic Beasts. I hadn't even seen what the Niffler looked like when I saw the movie and was completely delighted. I went in completely oblivious to what the actual plot was, except for what had been speculated on hype and MuggleCast. And I think I enjoyed the experience a whole lot more not knowing what was going to come. I can understand the desire to watch trailers, I can understand the desire to watch trailers, curiosity, excitement, etc., not to mention quality assurance and basic storyline understanding. I just thought it was an interesting topic and wanted to know your opinions. Thanks for all those hours of entertainment and fun. You guys are like the family I've never met, talked to, or even seen pictures of in a totally non-creepy way. Michelle.
That's amazing.
P.S. Thanks for taking this one for the team. Pam, that's really funny.
See, you had to get this one. Michelle made sure
I did,
of that.
I did.
She already thanked you for reading
I'm sorry for stumbling through your amazing email.
I love that, Michelle. I mean, Michelle, this just shows how well you know us, because you knew that this was going to go to Pam, like, somehow.
I have no idea why I'm the designated long email reader.
Some things are just not meant to be questioned.
It's become a bit, yeah. I just kind of go with it. It's fine. Send me your long emails. I will stumble through them and read them.
She poses a good question, though, about trailers, because I think... I will say, I mean, it's interesting because now that you mention it, I absolutely only watch trailers because I have to write about them. And I only really watch them when I have to write about them. So whenever there's something that I'm excited for and I see someone else has written it up, I'm usually like, oh, phew, now I can just... pretend it doesn't happen and then watch it in the cinema, because it's nice watching trailers in the cinema. Like, I'm okay with that, but I think more so than trailers, it's all the clips and all the featurettes and blah, blah, blah. Like, whenever there's some, like, say Rogue One is a good example, because I watched the first Rogue One trailer and I was super stoked. I watched the second Rogue One trailer and I was super stoked. Anything beyond that, I'm like closing my eyes and putting my ears in my head, what? My fingers in my ears. And and I'm like, no, I don't want to know. And if I have to write it up for Hyperbole, I like skim through it and try to avoid seeing it, because there's a very fine line between like being teased, kind of like what Michelle is saying, and feeling like you've seen the whole movie before you go into it. And I do try to avoid that even now. And I find myself very annoyed when, for whatever reason, I can't, because I have to, you know, write up about it or something.
Mm. I think that the movie that was the worst perpetrator of this, that made me stop trying to consume every piece of content that was coming out before the movie hit theaters, was actually Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. I don't know if you guys remember this, but
yes,
when that movie was coming out, literally,
a really good point.
Yeah, they showed
it,
like,
so much
everything
stuff.
From the Malfoy ferret scene to Harry in the bath with Moaning Myrtle. And I was so excited for the movie that I consumed all of the content. And then when the movie came out, I was like, I had the realization that I had seen most of the scenes that I was looking forward to from having read the book. So after that, I toned it down. And then, of course, like you mentioned, Michelle, it's really hard to do that in our line of work. And I think I watch probably more than Selena does, because I have this like inherent anxiety / fear over not referencing something in any article that I write that I know fans are going to want me to reference. So I probably overcompensate by trying to watch as, like, not as much as is out, but as much as I feel like I need to in order to do a good job. I don't know why, like, it computes that way in my head, but...
No, that makes sense. I'm just a little bit more selfish, I think.
No, I'm just like, for the greater good of news, I will watch all this crap. Aww. And be like... And it's so funny, because even sometimes you can get away with it. I usually only have to do it with, like, things like Harry Potter, Marvel, Star Wars, like the bigger franchises, but other things like with Moana and stuff. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I only watched the first teaser because I didn't feel like I needed to watch anything else, and so that's how I did it. But yeah, with like the bigger movies and stuff, especially if I feel like I only have like a general knowledge of this world that people are so enamored with, that I try to watch as much as possible just to make sure that I sound as educated as I can for, you know, when I talk about the things that people love. So it's more of a respect thing, I think. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't have that. I just don't want my movie spoiled before I watch them. So such an interesting question. Thank you so much for writing that in. So Emily Brown sent us an email. She says, "Hi, Hypes. I want to point out a few flaws I see in that Tina Grindelwald theory from last episode." So, by the way, this email kind of has a few spoilers from Fantastic Beasts, but it's like minor stuff. If you know that Grindelwald is in the movie, it's not really that much of a spoiler. So I do want to clarify, first of all, before I read the email, that Emily actually wrote in after she'd written in the first time to correct herself, which is good, on the fact that you can win the allegiance of the Elder Wand even when you defeat someone who's using another wand at the time. And this is something we pointed out last show, because that's what Harry did to Draco. But it's worth pointing out, because obviously the main point of the Tina is the master of the Elder Wand theory is that Tina took Grindelwald's wand, but it wasn't the Elder Wand she took. It was a different wand. But according to Harry Potter canon, that could still make her the master. So that's where we are right now. So I'm going to read the rest of Emily's comment now. Emily says, "It is, in fact, Newt who defeats Grindelwald, not Tina, albeit using one of his beasts. She just picks the wand up after he has already been defeated, and we've seen before that the Elder Wand is very sensitive to the defeat of its owner, not necessarily the disarming. See also how Grindelwald obtains it from Gregorowitz. He takes the wand and stuns him. We could argue some more loopholes, such as Grindelwald dropping the wand, which can also be significant, but I actually left the cinema thinking that if Rowling was going to play into someone else claiming ownership of Grindelwald's wand in the future, she had set it all out for that person to be Newt. However, I still think Grindelwald will be the factual owner of the Elder Wand until the duel with Dumbledore, as there hasn't been a mention of Grindelwald not being the owner of the wand when it happened in the lore, and playing the, oh, but he's not the owner trick again would feel cheap. Sorry for the long message. Hope to hear your thoughts on this." So this is very interesting. I think one of the main reasons why the Tina is actually the master of the Elder Wand now theory is so appealing is because we're like, well, this would give her a huge purpose in the series and actually make her way more badass than she's currently being allowed to be. But I do think Emily makes a good point that it's probably not. Like, it's probably neither of them, to be honest with you, because it didn't, like, it would have been a very subtle and possibly very confusing reveal. But I will just say, I mean, Joe did kind of rip off the whole Mad-Eye Moody being in disguise plot from book four. So her kind of repeating the theme of the Elder Wand actually belonging to someone else and you thought it did wouldn't be totally out of character for her. So I wouldn't rule it out yet, but I think she makes a really good point about it probably being Newt if it was going to be anyone. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, Dumbledore has... I think that it has to end with Dumbledore getting the allegiance of the wand from Grindelwald, so...
Oh yeah, because that's like how the she's already said that in an interview. That's pretty much going to be the crux of the fight.
Yes, exactly. So I kind of feel like if all of this is just going to be going back and forth, and then it still ends up with Grindelwald having control of it anyway, like I mean, it's a fun theory. I like the theory. I kind of like it better if it's Tina, just because it gives us something to do. Mm. But I don't think that's the plot we're going to be seeing in the film.
No, unfortunately, but it would be really cool.
Sure.
I do love the theory. I do love the idea that Joe is planning something like this, because I would really love to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be fun. Okay, we have one more email here. This is from Evan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who says, "Hi, after Selena's request on the last episode for new listeners to write in, I just had to say hi. As I have a one-year-old daughter now, I don't have time to binge watch TV shows and geek out like I used to. Instead, I listen to the Rewatchable podcast when I need a shot of nostalgia and use Hype podcast to keep me up to date and in the know of which shows to prioritize when I find time to sit down in front of the telly. I listen mostly to and from work, 1 hour each way, and love the company. By the way, Selena, I'm a fellow Dane and can totally relate to TV shows you haven't heard of or phrases in shows you saw as a kid and now only really understand, etc. Way to represent."
Yay, that's awesome. Happy fellow Danes. I should point out to everyone that her name is actually Eaton.
Oh, sorry.
So.
I'm sorry. Why? I need an Australian to write in. I can pronounce your names.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Marima, we learned that from you. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's not Australian, but that's fine. No, but you're
what's Australian. Like the weirdest Australian name? Like,
It's just like there is no such thing. The Australian thing is just to give everyone a nickname that ends in like a vowel or something. So, huh. Like, is just we like to make everyone sound as kind of ridiculous as possible. Yeah, we all have vowels already, so we're all good.
I was gonna say, I was like trying to do it. I was like, that's stupid. We already sound ridiculous.
Yours would be, yeah. Yeah, anyway. Okay, let's do tweets.
All right. Well, thank you so much for writing in, Eben, and thanks to everyone else who sent us emails. This podcast, we have a bunch of tweets to get through. So Pam and Merima, if you guys just start making your way down the list. There's two from Kelpie, so you can just take those two, Pam.
Okay. Kelpie says, I just a thought, two things the world can do without: crossovers and reboots. And then Kelpie also said, so I gave it a whirl and Gilmore Girls is way too saccharine for my cynical British taste. Were they going for an Amdram vibe?
It's funny, I replied to this and I promised to give a more like in-depth answer on the show, because I actually, like, I have a similarly cynical taste, I think, as you. But I think, like, that's, I really, you know, you will hear this on the Gilmore Girls specials too, but Gilmore Girls goes through a bit of a transformation. Like, I think what, as far as I get from our conversations, like, some people really enjoy the early seasons because they're like more sweet and innocent. But I really, like, once it gets like season three and things start getting a little bit more edgy and the characters' flaws really begin to come to life is when it really grips me, because I'm like, oh, this is like, these characters are so interesting, and I'm like not sure how to feel about their actions and stuff. So I mean, you don't have to, but if you want to keep watching, I definitely think that you will find yourself really enjoying it as the show goes on.
And I am very cynical, and I like it. Yeah. So that's a good benchmark. Okay, we have a tweet from Jasmine Diaz who says, that moment when hype reads your email, thanks for the responses, girls. Can't wait for the Gilmore Girls revival specials. Spoiler alert, we just recorded the first one for winter, yes. So look for that soon.
And it should be coming out, yeah, within the next couple of days.
Yeah, and we appreciate your fun gift choice also.
Yes. Amy says, I just listened to your Fantastic Beasts special, and I wanted to say that I also really loved Tina. Hopefully she will be more fleshed out in the sequels, but I thought she was precious.
Mark says, I believe you talked about Simon versus the Homo sapiens agenda on a previous episode. I really enjoyed listening to the Dutch audiobook. Oh my God, I love this book. I'm so glad that you listened to it. This is the book I'm always going on about.
Now we should all listen to the Dutch audiobook. Yeah. And we'll see how it
goes. Yeah. Okay, we have another tweet from Pam, not me, but somebody else that's Pam. A Pam, which is amazing because I never meet people with my name, who says, have any of you guys been keeping up with Westworld? Today is the season finale, and I'm so excited for it. The show is amazing. Well, fellow Pam, I have been keeping up with Westworld and I'm all caught up, so I'm ready to experience the 90-minute finale, and we can talk about it next week.
We have a tweet from Nicole who asks, is anyone keeping up with Designated Survivor? I've actually never seen this, but this is that Kiefer Sutherland show, right?
Yeah, I saw the pilot.
Yeah, it looks kind of fun. I feel like I would like it if I just sit down and check it out. Oh yeah, what does your brother think of it?
Well, my brother, he watches all those like political shows, like House of Cards and some other political shows. I can't name them off the top of my head. He's like obsessed with like men in power. It's kind of terrible, actually. But no, he really loves Designated Survivor, and he's like always trying to get me to watch it because he says I'll really like it. So I guess that's a good recommendation from that.
And finally, we have some tweets from the Lady Ash who wrote in with a bunch of hot on hypeables. Howie hypes?
Ho-hos. Howie hypes.
Howie hypes. Oh, I get it. Okay, got it. Okay.
I just did it wrong.
No. Okay, the Lady Ash wrote in to let us know how she's been hyping and said, I'm so excited for Rogue One and Passengers, also Office Christmas Party, but mostly because that'll be mindless fun. I've been obsessed with the Moana soundtrack. It's so beautiful. I listen to it while playing Pokemon Sun for extra island fun. Vlogmas is happening on YouTube. Daily videos from creators. It's nice to look forward to each day till Christmas. Recently watched Love Actually, and seeing Alan Rickman was hard. I've avoided his movies all year. Still very sad.
Oh, I forgot. I always watch Love Actually this time of year. And then yell at people who tell me I'm not a feminist. And like, I want to be able to do that. But I miss Alan Rickman.
Oh, no. And then we're all going to cry when Emma Thompson's heroin scene.
Oh, no.
It's so good, though. I think I'm going to watch it, too, this week. I'm going to make a point to do that.
I also watch it every year. That and Hook are like my... And Bridget Jones. They're
The Holiday. The Holiday.
Oh, The Holiday. Oh, The Holiday.
Yes.
And also the Home Alone.
A Christmas movie special.
Yeah, we should.
Oh, we should. That would be fun. People should tell us what movies they are.
Top five.
Yeah. Because we need more specials to record. So.
Also, Lady Ash, write in and tell us like who you're watching for Vlogmas, because we're all not very fluent in YouTube speak. So it'd be fun to hear from somebody that is keeping up with that area of the entertainment world. Let us know who you're enjoying.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much to everybody who wrote in. We appreciate hearing from you so much. And thank you for all your recommendations. It's such a good way to expand our knowledge of pop culture and what we talk about. So please keep writing in. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype, on Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and on Hypeable itself. That's hypeable.com. We're almost at the end now, but we did promise that we had an announcement, so we're going to get to that finally. Very exciting times. So, Merma, take it away.
Okay, yay. Hopefully this meets everyone's expectations. So we have a fun announcement, something heading into the new year, and we would really love all of your feedback on it. You guys have been great about keeping in touch by email and Twitter, so this is something we definitely would like to hear your thoughts. Because starting in 2017, assuming we all make it through the hell year that has been 2016, we need something to look forward to. And for us, that thing is we are going to be launching a Patreon for Hype, which some of you have been asking about, and we've been thinking about it for a while, but this is going to be a really great opportunity for us to continue to expand the show, to be able to like put in the time that we need to. And on your part, it's going to mean a lot of extra content, lots of more specials, bonus audio, videos, all this kind of thing. So we are really, really excited about this. We've been planning this for a while. And what we would love is we've made a little survey. It takes about the time it would take you to yell at me for not liking Fantastic Beasts or to listen to
you can do both.
The best song on the Hamilton soundtrack. You can get it done in that time. So we'll link to the survey in the show notes, and it'll be on Twitter as well. If you can take like just a minute to fill this out and let us know the kinds of things you might be interested in getting from us in exchange for supporting the show, we would really appreciate it. And we really appreciate all of you guys who have been kind of joining us over this year as we've been doing more specials and, you know, having all these kind of fun things happening. And this is just a way for us to like make the show better and be able to do more of those things that it seems like everyone's been enjoying.
Yeah, this is something that we're very excited about. And it's very important for you guys to know that this show is not changing. The Patreon is going to hopefully expand on what we do, but it's not going to take away from the hype that you like. So if you like listening to us on a weekly basis, discuss all the latest entertainment news, and if a Patreon has no interest to you, that's totally okay, because the show is still going to be here and it's still going to be free. We're not going to start putting up paywalls for the regular hype at all. So really what this is a chance for us to expand and to do more, but still maintaining the core of the show as the same. So we're not going to start like, you know, I don't know, like cutting the show in half or saying that.
Oh, definitely,
you know,
not.
Whatever. Like, this is not like this. The core show is still going to and always going to be the core show, and it's always going to be free. What the Patreon could potentially do is allow us to do more interviews, longer interviews, more specials, like Merima said, break down more shows, go into more book recommendations, book club, fun, exclusive material that we just, because of our work on Hypeable or wherever else we work, because of our commitment to various things, we aren't currently able to do simply for time and, you know, priority reasons. And it's even like the survey is a great first step. And even if you're sort of thinking, oh, I kind of just like Hype the way it is, and I'm not really interested in that other stuff, like if you want to still take a moment to fill out the survey for us, that in itself would be a huge help, because it would give us a really good indicator of how many people listening want more content from us, and if what kind of content they want, if they're willing to pitch in like a tiny little bit, how much that might be or wouldn't be, and anything like that, like any feedback on that count would be so hugely appreciated. And we will tweet out links to the survey and we'll put it in the show notes and we'll put it everywhere so you can find it easily. And we're just basically just really excited to hear from you, because you guys like kind of make the show, and you dictate already, like in a good way, a lot of the content that you do through all that we talk about, through all your feedback, and kind of point us in the direction of the kind of pop culture stuff that you are interested in, is the kind of stuff that we take on and talk more about. And we would potentially be able to do that even more if that's something you guys want. And we would love to hear what you want, basically. What do you want?
Yeah.
In so many words.
Yeah. It is definitely a way for you guys to have even more of a hand than you already do in our show. And like these girls said, it's like, aside from like the extra content that you could potentially get if you were so kind as to help support us, it also frees up a lot of time for all three of us to get together and put out more free content for you guys too. So
Not physically get together. That would require a lot more.
Yeah. If anyone wants to donate an airfare, that would be great.
Right. Right. Too. We'd have to find like the middle point for all three.
It would be like up in the air, but hype in the air.
That's what it, imagine.
That's the next step. Yeah.
We're going to broadcast from space.
Yes. Fly us to space. Oh my God.
Space is the next frontier. Yeah. Virgin Galactic, hype, we are coming for you.
That's it.
Like sci-fi from, you know, the scene.
No, exactly, but in all seriousness, exactly, like, we really appreciate it if you guys give us your input. And because we are constantly trying to think of new ways to make the show as amazing as we possibly can for you guys, whether it's by releasing a plethora of new specials or adding extra features into the regular news show. And the first step to doing that is really getting your feedback. So we appreciate it a lot.
Yeah. And the survey is like totally anonymous, and there's a bit there where you can leave comments and everything. So if you just have some feedback you want to send us about the show, and maybe there's something you don't like about the show or something you wish we did differently, like, this is a great place to tell us that too, because like Selena said, we're definitely keeping the core of the show the same, but we are always open to hearing what you guys like and don't like, and what you would like more of, what you would like less of. And heading into the new year is a good time to make those changes if there's anything that you would like us to be including or anything else like that. So you can do all of that over in the survey. We really appreciate it. Like we said, we are really, really excited about this. We have a lot of fun stuff planned. And thank you to everyone who has been like kind of coming along with us, as I feel like there's been more and more listener involvement, and we hope that you join us in this and that you're excited as we are for like what this could mean for Hype.
And so many new listeners too. It's so amazing. We love hearing from you guys, so don't be shy.
We do. But at the end of the day, like, we just love doing this show and we just love hearing from you guys. And even if again, as I said, like, it's really important to say, even if you don't have any interest in this Patreon, We still love you, you know, we still want to hear from you, and we still want like to make the normal show the best it can possibly be for you. And we are also hoping to be able to do some really cool upcoming fun stuff. Sort of leading off that, we do also want to point out some fun stuff coming up this week that you can look forward to. We have our first Gilmore Girls reunion revival special for winter, spoiler free, because I'm still spoiler free, that will be coming out, like we said, in a couple of days. We have our full interview with Cass Morgan, who is the author of the 100 books, and she's got a new book coming out this week, and she's going to be talking all about the big twists in that book that I'm sure some of you guys will be super excited about. So you can find, like, those will all come to the iTunes feed, which you should subscribe to if you haven't yet, and it'll come on Hypeable too, and we'll tweet out about it and everything. So this is just the kind of stuff to expand on. Like, it's kind of the example of what we're already doing to expand on the main show format and to dive deeper into certain topics that we really enjoy, or to have fun people on to talk about the things that they've made or the things they're interested in. And we just want to do that more, because that's fun. It's a fun part of entertainment, is getting to chat about it with people you like and the people who make the stuff you like and all of that kind of stuff. Yay. It's very exciting. All very exciting times in 2017.
Yeah, we got to make 2017 better because 2016 was so awful.
I mean, we're doing our bits for to hopefully improve 2017. But so keep an eye on all the stuff coming out from Hype, and keep an eye out for our survey link. And we can't wait to hear your thoughts on that. And if you just want to send us your regular feedback about this show or about anything you like that we talked about, anything, any comments you have, if you want to yell at Merima about her Fantastic Beasts opinions, or if you want to say how amazing she is and you totally agree and you're glad that someone finally said it, then you can also do that. Please get in touch with us, and we'll talk to you next week for another regular episode of Hype. That'll be Hype 126. Thank you so much for listening and for going on this journey of podcasting with us. Very exciting. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And I'm Marima.
And that's the end.
Bye.
Okay. Oh, everyone good?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were you clapping early?
No, were you applauding the start of the recording? Good job, guys.
No. Yeah. You hit record. Yay.
Yeah, well, you know, well, it's a little thing.
I might deserve it right now.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so let's increase the level of difficulty and try to do that.
You are not a nice person.
Oh, but I'm so funny, at least. It's okay.
Hey.
Okay, well, as long as you're awake. Mm-hmm. Okay, so seriously, though, we have to do the clap. So,
okay.
Ready to clap. You can clap your anger out at me. So in 3, 2, 1. Hold on, I just have to run 1 second. Wait.
Well, this is going to be a good transition. She can just be like, speaking of accessibility.
I feel like we should play the hold music or something.
Do, 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 do. Yeah,
exactly.
That's not the hold. That's like the waiting, the official waiting.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That's what I meant, though. It's like you're reading my mind, as always.
It's either going to be that or like some smooth Kenny G jazz.
Yes. Muzak. Muzak.
Muzak.
Sorry, guys.
Very good.
I was like, what is that noise? And I was like, went into the other room and the TV was on like loud, and I was like, I'm podcasting.